Welcome one, welcome all, welcome to another exciting episode of Tales of Citizens right here on the Sound Strategy Network. I am Bridger, and bringing you today's Star Citizen news and discussion is myself and my good co-hosts. Welcome, Gray and Calathulu.
Good evening.
So, going to start off today with a bit of meta. See, when I originally decided to make this show, I did what I do for most of my podcasts, and that's come up with different kind of segments for things that we could use as an idea. Like, one segment's where we go deep into a particular topic. Another one is where we just take a bunch of small topics and talk about them in rapid fire. Another one might be talking about the news. And another one is, hey, let's tell stories about the cool things that have happened to us while we were playing this game. Problem is, we can't really play the game that much yet. I mean, we've done that in the past. We've done some things when big patches come out, we'll all jump in and talk about how the game plays, like when Marine Command 3.0, we're absolutely going to do it again for that. But you know what? In the meantime, the life and the verse segment is kind of empty. And so we've been filling it with stuff that goes on in our lives other than Star Citizen. And somebody else pointed out, you know what? Not really interested in that. And I was like, you know what? Yeah, you're right. I put it at the beginning because I thought cool stories from Star Citizen would be a great thing to open the show with, and it totally would be, but we don't have all those all the time, so I've moved it to the end of the show because that was good feedback for the people that do enjoy hearing us talk about other pop culture stuff, like other games, other movies, whatever. That can still happen. It'll just happen at the end of the show. So, without further ado, let's jump right in, shall we? So, the most recent set of things going on that we've seen on around the verse and the various things going on. The main things that come out the last month or so is, from my point of view, just watching the ATVs, there has been a massive amount of work done in the last month that they've been detailing off.
Oh my God.
It's insane.
Yeah. Well, and they've so stepped up their releases to YouTube with the videos and the Q&A and everything. I mean, I actually have not been able to keep up. You know, we're doing crazy hours at the office, and now I'm behind on what's going on in Star Citizen because there's too much coming out where I can't watch it the 1 hour I have free at night.
Right. And I just have to like gush about one particular thing. One of the big things that have been showing off over the last couple of episodes of ATV is the new interaction system. I'm sure you guys have seen this. It's this way. It's the item 2.0, but also like the new interaction system. How you can interact with basically everything that they want you to interact with. Before it was literally just
prototype grabby hands.
Yeah, exactly. Before it was just walk up to a thing and press the use button and hope that you're aiming in the right direction. Now it's way more sophisticated. Did I lose somebody?
It did finally give us the ability to do very specific actions with certain items.
Yeah.
More things I'm excited about are opening and closing your cockpit, or locking a door, or
pouring a glass of shot.
Yeah, pouring a shot. There you go. So, there was a segment somewhere in here where they showed keypads.
Mm-hmm.
You could set combinations on keypads to lock doors and unlock doors.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to the first time I leave this game for a month and come back and can't get into anything I own because I forgot the combination, as always happens. But I do have a concern, and it goes way back to Steve Jackson Games, when Steve Jackson had a brief play-by-mail RPG. So you sent in a letter, and you got back a response. But in that game, you had a 25% chance to fail any physical action. And having watched these videos, I feel I have a 25% chance to fail any physical action. Which, when you're reaching for a drink, feels ridiculous. but, no, so the other thing is, we're going to have Fallout 4 in space. I mean, let's be clear. You're going to be able to loot everything you see on the table and then run like hell or put a bucket over some bastard's head and then try and steal everything from his shop. And hopefully it's not tagged incorrectly. So that's going to be interesting.
Well, sure. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So the interaction system's coming along really well. And the next thing that struck me while I've been watching these is that a massive amount of them are essentially like, we finished up the tools so that these people can build this stuff faster. right? Mm-hmm. We finished up the tools that allow people to sculpt, you know, bases faster. We finished up the tools that allow people to create the item interaction system much faster, to create the NPC interaction system much faster so that the conversation trees will be very quick to put in and build those. It's certainly a good thing to see, because one of the most unintuitive aspects of people doing game development is that you need to build the tools you're going to use to build the game.
Yep. It is interesting to actually...
Oh, there you go.
To actually see that level of creation system in place. I think we got to see the very first steps of what that would mean so far as planetary level stuff back in October for CitizenCon. But seeing this as being much more specific, like saying any cup can be picked up, any cup can be poured, there starts to be a little better idea of how they're going to handle objects just in general with that system. It's good to see it actually not being so piecemeal anymore.
Picking anything up in the environment and throwing it behind your opponent to make them look, and then shooting them in the face when they turn.
This is
don't
not
worry,
Hitman.
Your character will make a generic noise when they throw you're at.
And then the grenade will fall 6 inches in front of you, and you'll wonder what's gone wrong with your life.
What brought me to this point?
Yeah, I've made mistakes, and I regret them all. Now, the one thing this also shows to me is a bigger RPG side of the game. So this kind of creation skill system is what you usually find with storyline, but with the public universe, where it's going to be this kind of open-ended thing, now you're talking more about an MMO style, like a real MMO instead of a, you know, planes in space like a War Thunder would be for World War II planes, things like that. Yes. And so this speaks volumes to the amount of work they're putting into that, which, you know, back when the Kickstarter was happening, wasn't something we really foresaw. It was more of a Wing Commander, ride a rail, get to where you want to go in the story. And now it's, you know, this really open-ended creation. It's very cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
So they just mentioned that the M50 has been fully sort of converted over to be using the new interaction system, and the other ships are certainly on the pipeline to make that happen so that you'll be able to easily like open just the canopy or open the canopy and the stairs to get up into your ship or what have you.
And the likelihood is they're going to put in a few actions for each ship before we get the full system. But a lot of it's pretty straightforward. Turn on your engine, turn off your engine, open door, shut door. It's just a question for how long it takes before you get used toilet in the Freelancer.
Well, that and it speaks volumes to the salvage and repair system. I mean, if you can walk up to any component on the system and replace plate, replace wiring, rewire, bypass. I mean, you know, they've talked about having set up these different profiles and how you would jury-rig things and the salvaging or make upgrades, and this just dovetails so well into that system, what it's going to look like. I can actually see in that M50 video where, you know, he would be able to you'd be able to walk up to any part of it and, you know, use your mechanical skill or play the minigame. Although I do want to point out, Bridger, I found the perfect still from that video I think we need to show the world.
There you go.
Oh, God. That's good.
That's good. Oh, man. Oh, no. No one use that against him or make that your form avatar.
That would be bad.
Actually, talking about repair, it was noted on the subreddit that it looks like on the report, repair is complete.
Oh,
for 3.0.
That's fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
So at least the initial version of it, they're saying that completed... Yeah, before the 22nd of May.
Mm.
So it looks like they've got a part two of item conversion to go along with that.
Now, we've already – so clarify something for me. We've already had the repair, like, touchdown on this pad to repair, haven't we, in like, 2.6?
The instant repair, yeah.
Okay, so they're working on the next version of it, which is you touch down and some nanobots come out and you have to stay there for a while to get repaired.
I mean, that's what happens right now, is you touch down, and then nanobots come out, and your ship gets replaced with a fresh copy of the ship, is what it looks like.
There's not that mini game of actually fixing anything, which...
That's what they actually... I'm just trying to figure out what exactly
that's
was
the speculation
created
right now.
Oh, we don't know.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
The schedule shows it done, but there's no details into what the schedule means.
And yeah, what repair in this case is referring to. I mean, it could be just a debug of the prior system. It could be handheld repair. It could be any variety of things.
It could have to do with the pilot. It could be the virtual vasectomy system.
Or not. Let's go with that. Yeah. I'll say not.
Nope. Nope.
Oh.
Nope.
Nope. Nope. All right. Moving on. The Aegis Eclipse was the one that just got released and slash announced slash slowly teased into existence here. And it certainly is a nice looking stealth bomber.
Oh, my God.
I love it.
Yeah. It looks amazing. And it does, again, speak to the way they want to make. Like, first you had the Hornet, not the Tracker. Gray, help me out here. Not the Tracker.
F7C Ghost?
Ghost.
The Ghost, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, and that one, everyone talked about how it would be kind of pointless to have the stealth. There was some hope that it would be done well. This, again, speaks to a consideration on the sneaky Hitman-style gameplay of getting behind someone when they don't know you're there and then attacking. But it lacks the cargo. I'm waiting for the stealth pirate ship. You know, the one that pops out of nowhere, unloads, and then has enough space to take some of that home with it.
And they were very clear in the Q&A. By the way, props to CIG on this Q&A, one of the better ones they've done. This is not going to have any modularity.
Yeah.
This has zero ability to mount anything
but what's
three
on there.
Torpedoes.
Yep.
And those three torpedoes are in a special launcher.
Yeah.
They had six different questions in there that were all variations on that theme. Where it's like, can I change out the torpedoes for cargo space? No. Can I change out the torpedoes for lots of small missiles? No. No, you can't. It's only the three torpedoes and the two guns. That's all you get. It's highly specialized. And you know,
you should not use the two guns to dogfight.
There's a couple other highly specialized ships that we've seen so far that aren't super modular. Right, I think the information runner is one that comes to the top of my head.
The Dragonfly.
Yep.
Anything small. The Merlin also has zero modularity. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Apparently,
a lot of the smaller ships are being built to be what they are, which I think is a very smart move on their part.
Yeah. Where you run into problems where you have too much ship is when you've got. Everything can be totally customized and swapped out, so you find interactions that could never be tested for. Yeah. A Merlin with a torpedo, for example, might be a little excessive in large numbers, especially if you've got pilots who don't care about what happens to the pilot, the physical pilot after the fact, right?
Yeah.
So that's where I think they're the bigger ships, the more expensive ones, that actually matter if you lose. Like, it hurts you in some way. Either a long time on the insurance, or it costs you a lot to reload it, or whatever it is. That's where they're allowing modularity, because that's where they can kind of play test it, or rely on the community to play test it, as the case may be.
They can balance against the hull, and they can balance against the overall capabilities, and say, well, if it turns out that allowing this person to mount 75 missiles on their Idris is really a balance problem, we can talk about limiting what those hardpoints are capable of having on them.
I think another example is like the Hull series. I don't think you're going to, I mean, people always want to make, we speculate in the past by making Q ships or something like that, but it's really not. That's just not something that's going to be available to modify too much, I don't think.
They were stating that the only way you could carry ships with the Hull series was going to be to disassemble them.
Right.
And I'm down for that. I look forward to disassembling a ship and putting it in there.
And there's somebody out there saying, oh, the passenger transport ship, can I like retrofit that into a boarding ship? No, well, it's a passenger transport.
They said the same thing about the Drake Caterpillar way back when. I mean, and they, the infamous them, the other, the guys on the forums who said crazy things, which involved, let's be fair, probably me back in the day, which it's a little worrisome to think this has been going on so long. There is a back in the day for being in the development
queue. We're almost at 5 years, man. Almost.
I know. And when the Caterpillar first came out and there was the big... oh my God, this is going to be a little mini carrier that ran around for a bit. That was a lot of fun, but it's not going to happen. Although
people
I'm looking
are talking
forward,
about making it a Dragonfly carrier now.
Because
CIG showed you could have two per
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. So there are going to be some things, some ships.
Like, yeah, have fun with that.
Some ships are going to be more modular. I mean, the Constellation has like four different variants. The Freelancer has like three different variants. Those are like commercially designed ships. But when you're looking at this military ship that's getting, you know, mercenary equivalent being put on sale, the Eclipse, it's a very specific target. It's not like your F-15 General Strike Fighter. It's a very specific one.
As someone who's touched F-15s, let me assure you, they are very specialized. The modularity goes on those pods on the bottom. That said, I want to point out, you had a little fib there.
Oh.
There is only one true Constellation. The rest are mere pretenders to the glorious throne that is the Phoenix with all of its luxury. Pure
not even the Aquila. Come on. The Aquila is basically like the away team from the Enterprise, which is pretty awesome, right?
The Aquila is no what hot you tub. Have. Yeah, exactly. if you don't have a hot tub, you ain't got nothing.
Okay. I can't disagree with that for now.
And actually, from the Q&A, going back to the specialization thing, we did get an interesting tidbit. Obviously, we can't hold them to this number because it's so early in.
You can if you think you can.
But they commented in this about two Eclipse attacking an Idris.
Mm-hmm.
And they noted at some point here that basically, if you had two of these things attack an Idris with no shields and with no point defenses up,
so it's
you could disable the ship.
Okay.
As a spitball. Now, in and of itself, that sounds relatively innocuous, but there's a very important note here.
Mm-hmm.
That's 9 torpedoes.
Mm-hmm.
They mentioned specifically the shields have to be down for 9 torpedoes.
Right, and nobody's firing back at these ships that are taking the time.
No one's firing back to stop the torpedoes.
Right.
They're saying that a full 9 torpedoes hit the Idris with no shields. Oh. That means it will take more than 10 torpedoes, or more than 9 torpedoes
to destroy.
Disable, not destroy, but to disable an Idris if it has its shields up.
Okay,
and that assumes that they all hit the shields.
Well, it's not hitting the shields. Again, the shields are down. My take on that read was if you aim for the engines or the power plant, it will take approximately 9 torpedoes to disable the ship if they're all accurate and dropped at the same time and hit at the same time before anybody notices you're there. If it's maneuvering, they can avoid it. So it comes down to you have to have maybe 20 or 30 active ships fighting to knock down the shields, to hit the engines, and it's going to take 40 torpedoes to get in there and hit that pinpoint spot. Because, again, torpedoes are bore sight. You shoot them and go. It's like the old World War II rocket, sorry.
I don't know that that's true.
No, they're lock. No?
Okay.
Torpedoes are lock-on.
Pretty so that's changed.
I think the main, I mean, in my experience in sci-fi games and things like that, usually the main significant difference between torpedoes and missiles is that missiles move at a high speed and have a decent turning and tracking ability, whereas torpedoes usually have a much bigger payload but have a much lower ability to turn and track. Yeah. So a torpedo is not going to be able to turn and follow a 300i or anything like that, but they will because an Idris is going to be very slow and ponderous.
Yes.
The torpedo is a bigger payload to track down bigger prey. Well, they specifically say constellations. I think anything like constellation size and larger is going to be a good target for a torpedo.
But point stands here. It looks to be that the Idris in a lot of these ships are a lot tougher than some people might have expected. Saying 9 torpedoes will disable a ship with its shields down with no PDCs, that means you're going to have to really, really work to get one of these things if it's combat.
I mean, it better be though. I mean, think of how much more, like, sort of in money it takes to afford an Idris, assuming there's any kind of ratio similarity between the real price they're charging for them and the in-game price that they're charging for them. You know, most people assume that an Idris is going to be something that an entire, you know, small guild is going to have to pitch together like a month's wages of taxes to, like, earn to buy, right? It's not something that you can just be like, I'm just going to go mine a few asteroids and buy myself an Idris. Like, no, that's not how that works. You're going to need a little bit more.
I love how you went straight.
Wasp
place in Connecticut that is extremely wealthy.
Greenwich.
Yeah, you went straight Greenwich with the accent there. I have to give you.
I live just north of there, so I know the types. All right,
there you go.
Actually, it's closer to Farmington is where we get some of that. But anyway, not important. Let's continue. So the thing about this is it, and I think we might have talked about this in the past. It's been 5 years, but and 50 shows. But at what point are there too many ships? I've certainly railed against the fact that in certain FPS games, they have way too many guns to the point where each of the difference between any two submachine guns is essentially trivial. And you know, there's no real point in choosing one over the other because they're almost identical. What are your thoughts on this, Gray?
So for me, this hinged on three main questions, which I'll dive into a little bit more. First, how much choice should there be for a specific role? From a gameplay perspective, from a variety perspective, how much choice should we be presented for any given role? Two, does it help or hinder the game to have effectively equivalent choices with people, you know, obviously rapidly becoming fans of one over the other, even if they're effectively the same, doing the same thing? And third, how specialized does something need to be to make inter-role differentiation work? Things like range, armament, speed, turning, or whatever else. To start with the third question, I think we got a really good picture of how CIG intends to deal with differentiation with the Bomber Q&A. They did a really nice job of saying, here's what a Gladiator will be for, here's what a Eclipse will do, here's what Polaris will do, here's what a Retaliator will do. They did a really nice job of saying, well, the Gladiator will be capable of dogfighting. The Gladiator actually will have the ability to turn fight with somebody and will have the weapons and the shields to handle that. The Eclipse will be faster. It'll go in a straight line. It will turn for crap. It won't really do any damage. It won't be particularly survivable. And then, notably, the Retaliator, while they're saying that thing is going to actually be pretty prickly, you'll actually want to bring a Retaliator into a bigger fight and turret boat. At least by the way they were describing it. It sounds like they intend for that ship to stay in combat, not just run and gun.
So as you were mentioning that and sort of saying, you know, how many different ships per role, and, you know, you can have a bunch of ships that are basically the same and it's okay because people will have their, you know, they'll have their fans and one will become the favorite and others will like playing the underdog and choose the ship that's the road not taken or less traveled or what have you. And that made me think of this. This is a list of EVE Online ships. What you see on your screen is strictly the A to B's. And we just scroll, and we keep scrolling, and we keep scrolling. There's a lot of EVE Online ships. And when I thought of it that way, you know what? That's okay. It's not that bad. It works fine. What, Callie?
Bridger, I need you to put the cam back on your face, and then blink twice if robot overlords have come to seize you.
Oh, wait, no, why?
Okay. Oh, well, see, that you didn't blink twice tells me that we should, in fact, inform the authorities, I guess XCOM, that robots have come to kill you. But you're right. I mean, EVE Online has 1.5 billion, goddamn, and I realize YouTube has rules now, so I won't go any further than that, ships that they are really trying to chase down and... Uh-oh. I see. Oh, wait. It's back. It froze back there. They're really trying to, you know, they got 1.5 billion ships and you get all these different variants and everything's got this little tiny, you know, change to it and the pilot skills. And, you know, Star Citizen is definitely in danger of going the same way with these different tiers of craft. And that's one thing people really wanted, and I think still want, is every ship has a role and a purpose it fills. And so for me, that's the too many ships point.
Too many ships in a given role, you mean?
Exactly. If you've got 5 ships in a role and one is clearly better for that role than another one, that's where you run into the issue of why would I ever have a 300i when I could take a Hornet? Mm-hmm. The Hornet's always going to be better. Now, what we know about the Hornet is it has a much more limited range than the 300i. It has to have a carrier or other support to bounce out from and come back to refuel, and that's just from their old description of the ship. A 300i actually has the cargo space which the Hornet doesn't, or generally doesn't.
And the 300i is probably more expendable. And that makes the ships different enough. Like, but if you had a Hornet...
Never, ever balance based on expendable. That's one of the things you'll have to learn pretty quick in an MMO situation. If you base it in, oh, this is an expendable ship, either you're telling people that you're going to make it very easy not to die, or you're going to make it so it doesn't matter if their character dies. And the moment you do that, you're into the goon swarm bees situation.
I didn't mean to say that the ship is more expendable, only that it's less expensive and probably therefore less expensive to repair and replace. That is something to consider.
It's a good telling point, but when you have the resources of a large community behind you, it doesn't matter how much money you throw into it. If you're going to be an a-hole, you're going to be an a-hole to the nth degree. Not that I'm calling out Goonswarm like Gray has called out.
Well, I mean, they were very, very good at that.
They took all expendable ships
and they said, death doesn't matter. Throw 10,000 things at it and see what happens.
Well, right, but we know that death does matter. And it matters in EVE, too. And that's what they were taking advantage of. Because death...
If death matters in Star Citizen, then saying the ship is expendable or it costs less to replace is a bad metric.
Hmm.
Ships are going to have to die in combat. They have to.
Yes.
Both sides in a big fight are going to lose ships. Having ships that are expendable or knowing how expendable and how expensive they are to replace is going to matter.
The sacrifice isn't between expendable and not expendable, but between firepower and operational range.
Mm-hmm.
So a 300i has a better operational range, from what we understand, than the Hornet does, because it has basically more room for fuel. The deep space fighter, the Warden, the Vanguard Warden, mm-hmm. that is built to have extreme operational ranges. But will it hold up against a Hornet in a one-on-one fight? I have my doubts. And so again, that's your trade-off. Can I bounce, 10 or 15 systems over and get in the fight? Or do I have to be reliant on an Idris or another carrier to get me there? Because I won't make it on my own. That's where I see that balance. But the expendable argument is a 300i is basically a commercial craft, right? It's like the BMW of the skies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'd argue that anyone driving a BMW does not feel they're expendable. They may be less expensive than an F-18, mm-hmm. but they're not expendable. So that's one way to look at it. The cost to replace is a factor, but I think it should be weighed very far down the list compared to operational range, firepower you bring to the fight, purpose of a ship. But again, it all falls back to the role. Is a 300i a dedicated dogfighter, or is it a very fast courier? Can it be both? Is it a multi-class, to bring up that argument, ship, etc.?
And when you look at the 300 series, bring this into the combat example again. If you know that the 300 series will get creamed by a Hornet, and you know that your opponent will be bringing Hornets, and you are capable of bringing a Hornet, you'll bring it. Even if you think you're going to lose a ship, you'll bring it, because you don't want to come into these things outgunned. Nobody likes coming into an MMO 10 character levels down in a fight, if you want to call that equivalency here.
We call that Dark Age of Camelot, and when you had 10 character levels down, it went very badly for you unless you were an animist.
Yeah, and in this situation, you're not going to have levels distinctly, but saying I'm going to come in with 3 guns on a commercial craft against a bunch of military craft, regardless of what those are, you can bet you're going to lose. I mean, you may have the ability to outrun some of them. If it was a one-on-one situation or a small group PvP situation, there may be flavor of the month tricks, but I don't think that in a large fight you're going to see people want to bring their 300i when they could bring any other kind of military equivalent that will more likely survive and do more damage.
Yeah, no, I definitely see that as an important piece. But if you're in a smaller organization, what if you can't afford to bring all Hornets to a fight? What if you can only afford to get 325As or what have you?
Don't fight. ultimately, in an asymmetrical warfare like that, that's the issue you're looking at. I can't bring it all. Either I don't show up to that fight, or I create an environment where I separate them out, and the Hornet's operational range is the liability I exploit. Those are your options. You don't have anything else you can fall back on or rely on.
Right. And folks who choose to play in a way that doesn't reflect the reality of that, I mean, they bring down on their own heads whatever they bring down. If you go into a fight undergunned, you go into a fight where there's honestly bad odds of winning, it's not CIG's job to balance, to make it so your commercial craft can fight these military craft in the same role.
So,
I was originally a little concerned because, but, you know, FPS mechanics, there's only so many different ways a gun can be different, right? things that are better at close range. You got things that are better at long range. You got things that are more stable, things that are less stable, things that do more damage, and things that do less damage. Those are pretty much all the metrics by which you can change guns' behavior to make them differentiated and identical, or sort of unique and identifiable. But ships actually have a lot more possible mechanics, not only the ones you were talking about, but absolutely. Kinds of modability. How many gun hard points? What kind of hard points? How much can you change the power plant? What size shields can you put on the thing? What size engines can you put on the thing? So hopefully that'll create a very diverse grouping of ships in every role.
That's where they can balance it out pretty well. And there's a game that did a similar balance pass, but much more simplified. MechWarrior Online, if you play Clan versus Inner Sphere, the Inner Sphere have a lot of quirks on their mechs. You know, 30% cooldown on lasers, things like that. And it does go a long way to addressing the imbalance. You know, is it true battle tech? Probably not, but that's not relevant to the discussion here. So, that actually helps a great deal when you can have a lot more modability. So maybe you have these commercial craft or the mothball military craft with the weapons stripped off that have been, you know, reactivated for mercenary civilian service. They've got a lot of excess power. And it's also a way to avoid, you know, accusations of planned obsolescence. Maybe the next version of the 325A comes out, the 325, I don't know, B. And it has less modability. And at the same time, they release mod packages or whatever you can install that make your 325A about as effective as a 325B. And some minor differences on either side. That means that you, the player, who have spent real money on some of these ships, because it's been, again, a five-year cycle to develop it with these ship sales ongoing throughout, they will keep them in the game. It will keep them interesting and relevant, so hopefully they aren't mothballed as quickly as they might be. And thank you to Xander Zulu for pointing that out in the YouTube chat.
Yeah, that's certainly an interesting concept. Here's the thing that obviously makes it look a lot worse than it is most of the ships that they've been putting out have been single seat dogfighters or sort of multi-role type ships like the Caterpillar, the Constellation, the Freelancer, lots of different ways you can fit those ships out to do different jobs. Whereas you have like the Reclaimer, like it does one thing. The Herald is not going to be a dogfighter. It does one thing. And now you have the one thing that the Eclipse does. And each of those things is very different. Yep. We don't have – well, we do kind of have another stealth, you know, bomber. I think the Ghost kind of – it's not really a bomber. It's a stealth dogfighter though, right?
It's a dogfighter.
So,
yeah, that's a stealth fighter.
Right. So there's other sort of variations on that concept. But we don't have – I mean the Gladiator is a bomber – but it's not a stealth bomber.
It's a dive bomber dogfighter. It's the World War II.
Yeah.
Bit.
So it's like a fighter bomber almost. So there's different sort of on this spectrum of roles. There's different combinations of spectrums. And you also have the full extreme. Like, in fact, you know what? Somebody needs to make one of those weird like circle diagrams with like the different points. And it's like stealth or different roles. And it's like this one can be like a fighter and a thing. Not a Venn diagram. Like
they're not showing overlap? Okay.
Maybe. I don't know. The one that has like – it's like a pentagon and like it's a higher point. If it's really good at stealth, and it's a lower point over here because it's not very fast. Like the circular multi-axis thing, whatever that's called.
Pretty cool to see, actually. And when people have been talking about wanting to see differentiation between the fighters and the intention of why you'd fly a certain one.
Or I forgot about the
saber. Even why they were designed the way they would. It doesn't necessarily have to be that most people would ever pick a Gladius. I mean, you don't necessarily have to say anybody would want to fly a Gladius in X, Y, or Z situation. You can have some preferences. But at the same time, not saying, hey, the ship has some very specific reasons for existence, that would be a problem. I agree.
Well, and maybe the Gladius is the best armor tank dogfighter in the game. We just don't know it yet. You know, it's one of those deals where it will I look forward to that chart when we get closer to release and it actually has some real numbers behind it. And we can see how this stuff actually works in the wild, so to speak.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. So
I also wanted to make a point about overlapping with the roles. I think that's okay to have overlap occasionally. I think you can say these two ships do the same thing, and they do it roughly as well as one another, or one is slightly better at being tanky and the other one's slightly faster, but they're basically the same ship, so far as that's concerned. Yeah. I think for the role, or for the sake of the game, that's not a bad thing.
Mm-hmm.
I think having some variety in the universe, so you don't just say, okay, if I'm seeing a pirate, it has to be flying a Buccaneer, because that is the only fighter in that size class with that kind of armament. That would be pretty formulaic. I think I would rather see a situation where an NPC could be flying a Buccaneer, or they could be flying a Gladius, or they could be flying a Hornet, or they could be flying a Saber, or all these various fighters that exist out there, if only to make the universe feel more alive and more interesting, mm-hmm. even if players gravitate towards one or two options in the end.
All right, so the other sort of big news that happened over the last month or so was the death of permanent $0 cross chassis.
Yes.
what do they call them? Cross chassis upgrades.
Upgrades, yeah.
Yep. Man, help me out here, because from what I read, it seems like a fairly reasonable thing that CIG is doing here. Like, the only people who should be really crying are the ones who are abusing the system in the first place.
A little bit. So ultimately, it comes down to, back before they did their current upgrade system, they were selling these $0 SKUs to go from ship A to ship B.
They still exist. Until the last sale.
Okay.
Up until the eclipse, these were common.
I've not been looking for a while. I thought they had dropped them entirely some time ago, but I was surprised that they still existed. I actually have a couple of these $0 upgrades that I picked up because they were $0. So why wouldn't I, in case I want to switch my ship?
I demand my money back.
I know. I mean, but it's interesting to see how they're going to be using them now. But you know, in the end, it was there's ship A, and it's $0 to go to ship B if you want to do a one-to-one upgrade. And now what they've said is, okay, you can still do your upgrade, but it's going to lead to, permanent destruction? Like, if you lose it in the game itself? Or was I wrong about that?
No, what they're doing now is they're saying they're getting rid of the $0 CCUs on your account.
Oh, they're going to have an expiration date.
They're going to put an expiration date on them.
Got it.
The problem is that a very small number of accounts, mostly gray market, but also some players who were just very, I don't want to say OCD, but very thorough, were abusing the system to have hundreds or thousands, in some cases tens of thousands, of $0 CCUs in their account. For gray market sellers, this was a great way for them to say, I'm going to buy a bunch of dragonflies, or I'll have a bunch of dragonflies that I can uncrunch for cash, the old LTI token system. And then they would go from there, and they'd upgrade the dragonfly to, say, a Hornet, or a constellation using money. And then they would use a $0 CCU from that larger ship to the equivalent CCU that they had purchased before. So maybe they had a Banu Merchantman CCU for $350, and they would swap over from a Redeemer to a Banu Merchantman. That's just a spitball. I don't know if they're the same price. So, or used to be the same price, because that has changed.
What was the overall goal for people doing this? What is it? Does it make them money somehow, or were they trying to hopefully play the market?
There were a couple of ways that this could make you money. One is if the ship price went up. So speculators said, I think the Banu Merchantman or this other ship will increase in price. Even if it does, your CCU does not go away. So you could still go from a constellation, let's say this was an extreme case, you could go from a constellation to a Banu Merchantman, even if the Banu Merchantman's price doubled. So all of a sudden, you're holding on to a $0 CCU that has doubled in value. In those situations, that player could then undercut CIG on future sales.
Mm.
So they would say,
well, on like 1,000 copies of the ship, that can be pretty massive.
Yes, and they could do that repeatedly. So they could say, well, I'm selling unlimited LTI Banu Merchantmen for $280 a pop. CIG is selling them for $330.
Mm.
You know, huge market reason for someone to go there instead.
I don't know. It sounds entirely reasonable to me, and there was a big stink about it. Oh, well, you've locked people into this choice, and the ships keep changing, and we should have the ability to switch. And it's like, that's not what you signed up for, though, dude. Well, you signed up for to pledge, and you're going to get – and people make a big deal. Like, you could if I have an Aurora and I wanted to switch it to a Mustang, well, now I have to go in the game and actually earn it. Like, that's horrible.
No, you can still crunch your package.
Still switch it. Yeah.
You can still crunch your package and rebuy when the ship is available. There's nothing stopping anyone from getting rid of their pledge and getting the equivalent pledge again.
Well, then I don't see any reason to get mad about this.
Well, because there's a couple of reasons. There's a couple of valid reasons for people to be angry in this case. One of them is players who bought one CCU in a couple of directions for a ship.
Yeah.
So let's say that you bought, the Banu Merchantmen, and there were a couple of other ships in the same price ranges. Well, I don't know if I want, or I don't know if I want a Retaliator, a Banu Merchantmen, a Redeemer, or a Reclaimer. One.
Yeah.
Let's say So they say, I don't know if I want to do salvage or I want to do trade. Well, now they're going to have to make that choice because the CCU that goes between those two ships that they bought so they could make that choice is going away. They will no longer have the ability to just trade them out at will.
Yeah.
If you were thinking that you had a free pass to choose between those two limited ships with LTI, you don't. It's gone. That would be a reason that some people were sort of validly angry.
I don't think that's a valid reason. I mean, okay, yes, it's a valid reason to think if you were under the assumption that you were going to get to keep this choice forever until you decided you wanted to make it, then I guess you're going to be angry. But there's no reason that has to be the case. The main thing is you buy the game for $45 or $60 or whatever it is, and you start with an Aurora or you start with a Mustang. That's what the vast majority of people are going to be doing if they buy into the game later. And that's probably what the vast majority of people in general did. I think the overall, if you crunch the numbers and just divide, 150 million we're at now by, the 1.8 million subscribers, you get roughly $90 per person or something like that. Maybe it's closer to 100, but that's not because most people are buying about $90 worth of stuff. That's a huge number of people that bought in at $45 and a much smaller percentage of the group that has thousands of dollars worth of ships. So it's
Bridger, there's a term for the people that have thousands of dollars worth of ships, and it's in Stellaris. The Githyanki Space Whales.
Yes, indeed.
Now, the other thing, and this sort of goes back to the reason some people were using CCUs, $0 CCUs, is that they wanted to be able to try multiple ships. Now, the REC system should hypothetically cover this, and I think that the REC system desperately needs a revamp to be easier to use ships. Or, for that matter, they need an AUEC equivalent. I think we're overdue for the ability to rent a ship in the PU. I think you should be able to go to Olisar or whatever we have in 3.0, use AUEC for missions, and rent a ship just like you do with REC, but do it in-game. I think a lot of folks were seeing $0 CCUs as their way to try out the Gladiator, even though they had the Hornet. Or to try out the Redeemer, even though they only had a Constellation, once the Redeemer's flight ready. I think there were a lot of folks who had a pile of $0 CCUs because they didn't want to lose the perks that were on their package. So let's say they had a physical Hornet package or have a physical Hornet package from the Kickstarter, and they really want to be able to fly a Gladiator, that's going to become a lot harder now. They'd have to earn REC. And even then, I don't know if those REC rentals will carry over for them into the PU. I think that's not supposed to, is it?
No.
I'm assuming it's going to get reset at the very least.
So the REC can still be used in Arena Commander, from what I understand. But it won't be usable in the actual PU.
Yeah. And as long as that's the case, it makes it impossible for somebody to go into the PU and try any ship that they want to try, whether that would be for the purpose of buying one or just flying to have fun.
Mm.
And I get that being able to fly certain ships is a perk of people who pledged a certain amount or pledged for a certain thing. And that's good. I'm glad CIG made it somewhat more exclusive there, but we're past that point now. We need to be able to have people try whatever ship they want to try in the persistent universe so that we can see those roles and those actions flying around, even if only for a very short time, for a short time that they're stuck in their Aurora doing missions before they can then use the AUEC to rent a Hornet.
Yeah.
And honestly, I think it should go even further. I think it does do this, right? Yeah. If you play single player or you can do like a free flight in any ship, right? Or is that not the case now? I feel like that should be the case. You should be able to free fly any ship.
I think that would be nice.
It would be. They have free flight for subscribers.
Oh, subscribers can free fly any ship?
Well, no.
Or just specific ones?
A couple of ships.
Limited ones. Yeah.
Am I using a long term? I mean, patch. So I know they do the weekly like, hey, this week such and such ship is free, anybody can fly it. What I mean is anybody should be able to jump into like Vanduul Swarm with any ship out there, single player, just to mess around and learn, hey, is this a cool ship? Do I like this ship? And that makes that way they can Vanduul make a more informed Swarm? Decision.
So, I don't know if Vanduul and Swarm is appropriate necessarily, but well,
something
least,
like that.
At least solo free flight.
That's what I mean, yeah.
So the subscribers get a token. And they can use that, or they did.
No, they eliminated no that. So they revamped subscriber perks. This is, I don't know if we covered this or not.
No.
So subscribers now get one ship every month that gets picked by CIG that you can fly. This month, I believe, it's the Caterpillar.
Okay.
They get access, if you're an Imperator, to some of the alien ships in addition to that.
Okay.
But the other thing is that subscribers get access to all of the ships for a week after every major patch.
Yeah.
So you get 1 week of PU every ship free flight if you're a subscriber.
Mm-hmm.
So that, if you want to subscribe, that's a really nice perk.
It is.
If you don't want to be spending money every month on this kind of a game, which is a valid position, particularly if you only bought one package, as many people did, particularly at the beginning of the Kickstarter, but you still want to play, you need an alternative. And I think that alternative, rather than me being a good Samaritan and going into the game and chatting with people in Auroras and letting them fly in Hornet, should be the ability of somebody in Aurora to go do some trade missions or do some re-enable satellite missions.
Mm-hmm.
And then come back home after a couple of hours of testing that way for CIG's mission state.
Yeah.
Now, make sure that this works is effectively what they're doing.
Yeah.
And then they should be able to come back to Olisar or go to a base and rent a Hornet. Or AUEC purchase a Hornet for that patch or whatever it happens to be.
Right. That's certainly a way to help. And of course, and they've done this in the past too, which is, this week, you earn extra rec if you try out these missions because that's the ones we want people to test, right? Or if you fly this ship this week, you'll earn extra, of these testing resources because they're trying to reward people to test the very specific things that they need to test. So, I think we talked about that before in a previous show too.
Yeah.
It needs to be in the PU rather than in Arena Commander.
Right. In the past, that's exactly where they did it, was Arena Commander. They would give you discounts on a particular weapon or something like that in Arena Commander. Mm-hmm. But I could definitely support that kind of a thing in the PU while we're doing this, before the release. Once you get to the release, then nobody can complain anymore because that's the point of the game is trying to earn your way to better ships over time or to more expensive or to more ships that have more nuance to them or what have you.
Absolutely. And I do feel for the folks that wanted to have the ability to trade between two or three ships and make their choice closer to launch.
Yeah.
I genuinely hope that CIG allows them a way to do that, even if it's just with the ticket system, and they say, we're going to let you do this once. Just so closer to launch they can make that choice.
Hmm.
But we'll see.
I mean, maybe
I don't think that's it. That's honestly not that big of a deal breaker, though. It shouldn't be that big of a deal, because it's like, oh, I've got a reclaimer so I can do salvage. And then when the game launches, you're like, oh, but I actually wanted a hull C so I could do, you know, hauling. Okay, do salvage for like a week and then buy a hull C. Like, it doesn't seem to be that big of a, or just buy a hull B, you know, really quick, or a hull A.
I hope so. I hope what you're saying is absolutely the case, that people will be okay with that. But
Look at it this way. Logically, we have now hit that point closer to launch where you have to pick.
Sure.
Yeah. We're getting there.
It's at the point
you
now.
You've had five years to decide.
It's been an ongoing effort. It's 5 years old. I just checked my hangar, and my first purchase was November 9th of 2012.
Yeah, I mean, even if you look at the more recent ships, you've still had like 2 years to decide for most of them, with the exception of like four ships.
Yeah, it's, and the real suck of it is the people are more interested in a lot of cases in making sure they maintain the perks of whatever that pledge was.
Well, and that's where the upgrades are nice, because you can upgrade a package without losing the perks. I mean, I've got a couple of them, but at this point, you know, ultimately, the way to look at it now is it's time to choose.
It's time to choose.
It's time to pick a role you're interested in. Let CIG start planning around those numbers. And then, when we hit launch, that would be about the time.
Yeah. All right.
It's like, all right.
And, okay, so with that, let's move on to the concern of the week. I found a very interestingly titled and very interesting thread on Reddit called The Clown Car Problem. And this hadn't actually occurred to me, but it goes something like this. It is technically possible to fit a great number of players into any multi-crew ship. I mean, just think of a Constellation. You can probably fit 30 or 40, 50 people in there just standing up in their 2-foot by 2-foot square against a wall, whatever. And then if you land on a bigger ship, they can all board in like a group of Marines, even though the ship isn't designed as a dropship. Like, why use... Was it the Redeemer is the gunship, but we don't have an assault ship yet, do we? Why use a specialized assault ship that can only fit like 6 or 10 people when you can fit a huge number of people inside of a Constellation? Well, there's a lot of different reasons why that might not work out too well, because, I mean, maybe the Constellation can't pierce through the hull. I mean, that solves all our problems, doesn't it? But I guess the real question here is the problem of, you know, how do you deal with fitting tons of people on a ship when, you know, and that kind of breaks your verisimilitude. Like, there's something seems weird here. Is this just a case of, you know what, the ship life support systems can't support that many people, but then everybody just comes in their spacesuits and doesn't care?
Or the spacesuits don't last long enough to not care. I mean, you might get 30 minutes of time in a suit or something like that. So you've extended your life, but not by as much as you'd want. Or, I mean, who knows, maybe there's the thing, you know, the ship will not go to warp if you're not able to lock down the boots on people, or you instantly die if you're not locked down and the ship goes to warp. That might be one thing. The inertia still exists in some way, shape, or form. So, you know, if you go from, like, the Elite Dangerous, you know, style, or the New Star Citizen style, you know, slow speed to hyperspeed, you know, and you've gone straight to plaid. You'd be in a chair or be a thin red paste.
These Somebody actually options. Did point out that that if you're not in a seat when doing high G maneuvers, like during combat, you should just get thrashed around inside the ship.
You should take collision damage if that happens. I agree wholeheartedly.
Because, you know, the compensators can only do so much, and they're designed for you to work in a chair. So there.
Yep.
That's a pretty interesting idea. I'd love to see, like, the cargo pod of a freelancer just packed with people, and then the person driving just trolls and just starts doing like as high G maneuvers as possible. Ooh. And people inside going, I'm gonna throw up, stop the ship.
That's only if you have VR on, though. That's when you throw up.
Yeah, it sounds like they're basically going to allow people during normal flight to be fine. The question is, it doesn't sound like they're going to make somebody standing in the back seat black out, or standing in the back of the ship black out, by the current estimates.
Yes.
Unless they make the pilot's G-force state just simply mass affect the rest of the ship.
That made me just think of something. So one of the problems here is if you have a hard limit and say no more than 50 people can spawn into an Idris, you know, in addition to the NPC crew or whatever, then that certainly poses an issue. That might actually be a technical limitation. Who knows how many individuals will be able to spawn inside of a ship with their netcode still being able to handle it, right? And then we'll see. Maybe 50, maybe 100 guys. But can you... When you respawn, do ships like that have a medical bay that you'll respawn in if you take damage? And then in that case, is it just like the defending crew is essentially limitless because they'll just keep getting up from the medical bay?
Until you permadie?
Until you permadie?
Yeah. Or there's a timer on the medical bay. So once you're dead, you're in there for X minutes.
I guess the best solution would be if they can't get your body to the medical bay, you're going to respawn somewhere else, like on a planet somewhere.
Nowhere near the action.
It also might be when you're talking about how many people can spawn on an Idris or that kind of situation, they have to be very careful not to allow people to do the safety clown car. Fit in the max number of people that can sit in the ship that are all friendly.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're invasion proof.
Right.
You can step on board.
Right.
Or no one can be in the same instance as you.
Yeah, because you've locked out.
You've maxed. Exactly. So there's always going to have to be extra room padded on top for
one party, max party size goes in an instance. And if you have two parties, they get bumped to different instances by default.
Remember the whole discussion about instancing, don't you?
Yes.
The whole thing where they're going to basically subdivide things down and down and down and down, depending on how many people are there.
Right.
Yeah.
That has to exist for this to work.
Right.
Yeah.
Effectively.
So the front of the Idris might be its own separate sort of instance in terms as far as the net code is concerned.
The hallway leading to the bridge may be its own instance. I mean,
They're coming in.
Well, that's just it. They might simply design it so, you can see somebody in another instance.
Oh, okay.
That's all they have to do.
But that would make you both interacting together so you'd be in the same instance.
Kind of.
Yeah.
But not.
Yeah.
It's how you define instancing in this
case. I'm with you.
So as long as you can see into another instance.
But then is it designing the larger ships in such a way that you can only fit physically so many people in a certain amount of space, which would by itself limit how many people you jam into that instance. So they want to make it so the bridge only has foot space for X number of people to be standing crammed in like sardines, kind of thing. Yeah. That way their net code doesn't get pushed past the 100 that are allowed to be in there, and life is pretty good.
Yeah. Now, that said, the instancing has changed a bit since those days as well. Because that was a thought, everyone inside of a ship would be in a separate instance doing things that interacted with a larger ship versus ship world. And now their multi-crew has shown that it's all basically one seamless experience. You can look in a window and see a guy walking around. So that would imply either there's some interesting camera in the game development sense, not camera in the photography sense, camera work that's going on. Or that there's something that's a little more seamless or smooth with the move to AWS and Lumberyard and the instancing support they have from Amazon.
I mean, it probably is a camera-type system in that point.
Probably.
There's going to be some seamless transition, but what you could have is two instances. Each of them does control of all of the objects and everything else, and then just sends data that's relevant to the other one.
Mm.
This goes back to the containerizing and everything else, doesn't it?
That's true. Like, that's very true.
So the outside of the station, the outside of Delmar, so far as you're concerned, could be a container compared to the inside. And the inside and outside, you see the people going down the elevator and everything else. That's the two containers talking to each other and then relaying to the player in each one what's going on.
Yeah.
So an interesting...
There's a dual universe I just had linked over by Ashlyn here that was discussing this instancing division technology. Here, I'll link this over to you, Bridger. This whole concept that Dual Universe is talking about is effectively the sort of thing that CIG is talking about.
Okay.
Where they're trying to have instancing, here we go, dynamic area splitting.
Okay.
So this is the same sort of concept CIG is talking about.
Hmm. So
you
it's
can
like
see those little,
yeah, the little squares get smaller and smaller. And I think, I mean, the way that CIG has described it before is that you'll be able to see into the instances that are near you. So you, if the instance gets so small that, you know, in the distance that, you know, Freelancer or the constellation and or what have you is there, you'll be able to see it. It just won't interact and affect you because it still should hopefully be far enough away that, you know, bullets and, yeah, and lasers and what have you aren't going to make it over to you. So you can still
and
see the effects.
Let's clarify to our users here real quick. When people think instances, they think World of Warcraft.
Yeah.
They or think Guild an War. Isolated thing where you can't see anybody else.
An isolated yeah. copy of a thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
What we can be talking about with instances here is a portion of the game client running on a server.
Yeah. And so they'll have to have some kind of interface where they hand
between
off game objects
servers.
Between the two servers. So yeah. That's why a bullet would travel from instance one to instance two, because you've got the code that says this is the bullet, this is the velocity, this is the angle, this is the handoff. So the yeah. actual bullet itself, looking at the video you linked plus thinking about netcode in general, may exist on several servers at once, and its position is going to be really interesting. because, okay, you handed it off here, it also didn't hit anybody, you said, it hit a guy here, so it existed and it's supposed to be here, and I verified, so that's going to be, that will be an interesting problem to code and handle. Although, yes. Bridger, I want to point out one small complaint.
Okay.
You did not take advantage of this moment to play clown car music in the background.
So, Spidercoat on Reddit has attributed this. CIG has said that if you have too many ships jammed onto a carrier, you'll get a message on your ship's
yes.
HUD and be unable to use your quantum drive until the extra ships are removed. That's one way to deal with it. And that makes sense with ships as well. Like, you'd need places to lock them
yeah.
down so they're not movable. And he says, imagine they'll use the same solution when it comes to players as well. whereas, you know, if you're not in a jump seat and your ship tries to quantum drive, it's like insta-paste. Have fun with
yeah.
that, or just damage. It might not even be insta-paste, but, you know, body damage that
you just fall down a corpse.
Yeah.
It could be that easy.
I'm down for thin red paste, honestly. I mean, I want to turn that into some kind of soda meme
yeah.
throughout the series. You know, Ben's Noodle Shack, you know, red noodle curry.
Oh, jeez, no. It's people! It's
people! I'm going to quantum drive.
So yeah, I think ultimately this is a concern. The clown car could be real. I also suspect that there are solutions that exist in place. That
there's solutions in that you can take. I mean, the CIG takes so much from reality to preserve verisimilitude that you could take a ton of different things, including the you must be strapped down to go into quantum drive. And if you're not, and there's
yeah.
only, you know, 5-6 strap down slots in a freelancer or what have you, then, you know what, that could certainly be a piece of cargo. A piece of cargo or a mod that you put into your freelancer is, hey, the cargo pod now has space for an extra, you know, 10 people to strap down for quantum drive. And that
yes.
takes up your cargo space, and it means you can't put missiles there, like on a freelancer Miz, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And it means you can't haul extra ammunition, you can't haul whatever else, but you're hauling people instead. Because they need these special seats
yeah,
that have inertial dampeners or what have you.
Yeah, and make it pointless to argue about how you should remove the, you know, the failsafe, where I can go to warp if I have people on board,
wow.
but I want to kill.
I do. I want to kill them. Yeah, that's not a bad idea. They're in the hangar. They're in the hangar. All right, we've only got 2 seats in the hangar. Just go and we'll deal with the last 2 that are alive.
Thing you need to stop them from getting away first.
Disable
if you
engines,
hop onto
yeah.
a live ship, it's going to hurt.
Yeah.
Or for that matter, this gives a reason for dropships again.
Yeah.
Yes.
Everyone keeps asking, why are there dropships?
50
seats.
Yeah.
That's why.
Yeah.
I mean, what's the big one? The Genesis Starliner. There's a military dropship version of the Genesis Starliner.
Oh, that'd be fun.
That's why that exists. They need a pile
sense.
Of chairs.
It's true.
Yeah. So yeah. So there. It's a concern, and it's doubtless not going to be a huge deal.
Probably not. No, I don't think so.
Oh, and did you folks catch the thing with air shields this week?
Air shields.
They mentioned that opening the back of your freelancer and not having all the air get vented is going to require an active shield module, which will automatically turn on when the door opens, if you so please.
Or I just suck you guys out in a vacuum. I don't know. This seems like
yeah.
good options.
They're saying that it'll be a lot like opening the doors at Port Olisar if you don't have the air shield on. So your character just fall over and die without a suit on.
Hmm.
But they're saying it'll take power.
That makes sense, yeah.
That's the real win
here. There's all kinds of trade-offs you can make there.
If your power is down or you want to reallocate power to weapons or something, you may not have enough for the air shield.
Yeah, and that's why everyone on board should be in their heavy armor or whatever it's going to be.
All the time.
Always. No, it's you got to hook that plumbing up no matter how much you complain.
That's what the pipe system's good for. Yeah. It's good for plumbing. Just ask anybody who's played pipes. Galaxy Trucker.
Oh God!
All right, with that, I'm gonna call an end to the show roughly on time, about an hour long. I usually shoot for 45 minutes, and we're here for an hour and a half, but that's about it. Thank you, guys. This has been Bridger and Calathulu and Gray. We are signing off. See you in a couple weeks. Last Sunday of each month at 7 p.m. is when we record.
Yeah.
Even on holidays, despite our best efforts.
Absolutely.
At the end of June. I accidentally
opened that file earlier. Like, I was getting it ready because I expected the show to end soon, and then I opened it, and it started playing. I'm like, well, can't stop playing it now. That's going to sound like a mistake.
No, it was a good cutoff point.
It was. I'm glad that we didn't go too long. I mean, it should really not be that long. There's not much to talk about. How do we do this?
Because we're chatty bastards.
I guess that's the thing.
Basically. Yeah. No, these are some pretty big topics on this too. I mean, CCUs, that's gonna be a huge
That has a lot of financial impact. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, honestly, gray market deals, I'm okay with them.
Yeah.
I think that it's a good thing for people to be able to sell a limited ship that they bought to somebody else to keep it in circulation, because that means the interest is still there.
But this is clearly a financial loophole that can be addressed in a valid fashion. So, yeah.
Exactly.
You know, what I would do if I were CIG is it was a free item, so we're going to remove all but one from every account, and you can use it one more time, and then it disappears.
Yeah.
And done.
I would be okay with that if they did a lot of the retroactive removal, with one distinct problem.
Mm-hmm.
People will make 10,000 accounts.
But if you before you announce it, make it untransferable.
That's not a bad idea.
See, there you go. If you don't tell them, these aren't transferable anymore. Okay, well, now I can do something with it. Okay, or, now you have one shot. And
there's another possibility here that we're missing. Make ships that have a $0 CCU applied to them untransferable.
There you go. That also would work.
That could be a way to deal with
your account. Yeah.
I mean, the say issue that there, the ones that are unapplied right now, let people keep them, but it'll account lock your ships.
So the issue there is, if I do that, the Banu Merchantman sold for $275 way back when. It now sells for $350.
Yep.
The $0 CCUs take it to a $350 value ship. You have to have the code on the back end to check to make sure you weren't getting more in credit than you paid.
See, the problem is from there then, people will CCU the $350 up to whatever they want, and they'll make whatever money's in the middle.
Yep.
But I think it becomes less of an issue as long as people have an account locked.
Yeah, account lock takes care of a lot of stuff. Which is why they do that in like World of Warcraft and Guild Wars and all that, right? You bind it to your character or your account, and
you're
done.
If they made it more account bound, I think it might mitigate some of it. I think some people would still get a smoking good deal.
Yes, they would.
But we'll see.
It'd be once and it'd be done, and they wouldn't worry about it anymore. That said, I mean, however they handle it, the backlash is going to be big, and it's going to be mostly that little tiny group of agitators who scream at every change. Like, the move to Lumberyard shows a massive change to the engine when reality was it was 2 days of code, things like that. So, but on another note, I have a life achievement to list here.
Oh.
I've never done this before, I forgot to move the life in the verse segment to the end.
Yeah.
So here we are. What's your life achievement?
So my daughter and I have—I've never played a game of Pokemon, the card game.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So she was really interested in the cards, and we sat down and we played Pokemon, the card game. It was Hoopa versus Mewtwo at the end of it there. So there you go. She
was
has
this
played...
a original edition Mewtwo, or is there some?
We bought like a. Okay, I did. GameStop had a Pokemon event.
Mm-hmm.
And everything was on sale. So this is where I got interested, because it was cheaper. So we showed up, and they had a table laid out, and they clearly opened a couple of packs and said, hey, you know, trade a card, take a card. That was their card trading event. But then everything was on sale. So I said, hey, they've got these starter decks. Pick one you want, and we'll each have one, and we'll play it at home.
Nice.
And so, and I found a good use for my extra RSI mouse pad, the giant one. Because
nice.
I bought one, and then my card wife game. Bought me one for Christmas. Now it's a card game top, like a tabletop to lay out and play on it.
Ah,
so yeah,
nice.
So there you go. And then the BattleTech beta is coming. I am so looking forward. They dropped the multiplayer, but I'm so looking forward to that.
They dropped the multiplayer?
Well,
they dropped it.
It's going to be in the release eventually, but they keep pushing back their beta because they're having issues with multiplayer, making it work right in this turn-based tactical game, right? So they dropped
this is the one that's being published by Paradox, right? Is that what you're talking about, BattleTech?
Yeah. I didn't realize it was being published by Paradox.
Interesting.
BattleTech Kickstarter. So Harebrained Schemes is the developer.
Yep, that's Paradox.
Okay, there it goes. Oh, awesome. I did not realize Paradox was doing the publishing. That's fantastic.
So yeah, definitely. I'm looking at just a video of sort of the trailer they had.
You have to go to kickstart.com and play.
No, it won't. It won't let me open the YouTube in a full screen. I never understand why they do that, because I can just click on it and go to YouTube and open it in a full screen. It's ridiculous.
Because that's what YouTube wants you to do.
I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
So it does have a little bit of gameplay, sort of like some very early gameplay showing here. This turn based.
Yeah, and they've done some, like, you know, this is where we're at in development. About once every month or two, they do another video just showing where they're at. They do a Twitch live stream and show the same thing. And, you know, BattleTech's, you know, it's been my jam since I was 11. And I've always loved it. It's the reason why I put up with shitty publishers, Activision, looking at you, Piranha, not much better. But Piranha's gotten, they've learned from some of their mistakes.
I've got two words for you.
Oh?
Transverse.
Is what? That when you have an operation in your universe?
You don't remember this?
No.
Oh, no. I guess it's one word. Let me pull this up real quick.
There... Is this like when they backed off on some of the like the clan invasion stuff?
No, this was a train wreck, man.
MechWarrior Online Studio announces Transverse, a persistent player-driven sci-fi MMO.
Yeah.
Piranha Games started... a new game called Transverse, and it pissed off the people because MechWarrior Online wasn't done yet.
It was not done, and Piranha was trying to expand.
This was 3 years ago.
Kickstart Transverse. Yeah. And
which
the funny part
Star
is
Citizen.
They had a whole pile of ships that were basically Star Citizen clones.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was awful. I agree with that. They did a poor job. Now, see, in Piranha, like, I don't give them money. I just play the games. to be fair, and I wait for the next come available with C-bills, and when they eventually go out of business, and honestly, it will happen. I will feel bad, but I will also have enjoyed. You know, what Piranha did better than anyone who has done a Mech Warrior or BattleTech game is they did the mech models right. They look amazing. Versus, you know, Activision or, God, that, like, super action version of BattleTech that was just awful on the Xbox.
There was a MechWarrior RTS. MechWarrior Tactics or something like that?
Yes,
back?
Sounds right.
MechWarrior Tactics and MechWarrior Living Legends. Living Legends is an interesting one. It's done in CryEngine. It's a fan-created multiplayer mod based on the BattleTech universe. So I don't think it has a license to any of the BattleTech stuff. But that said, it's amazing. So Harebrained Schemes bought licenses to all of the mech models from Piranha to put them in the game.
Wait, how does... That's weird. So Piranha actually owns all of BattleTech with regards to gaming
in terms of licensing? No, they made the models, and Harebrain's like, can we like buy them off you and use them in our game? And they're like, well, it'll cost you X. And the Kickstarter raised
so they both X have license to use the BattleTech
games.
Game Lab, but they not only had the ability, so because they both had the license, then they said, well, we'll just take and use your models. That makes sense.
Yeah, exactly right. And so Catalyst Game Labs has the tabletop license, and Facet Interactive is owned by Microsoft. And I don't know how the licensing scheme works. I think it's because, you know, MechWarrior Online's is first person cockpit view, and that's like a different game than the turn-based tactical one. Yeah, but anyway, so apparently in June, we're looking at the BattleTech beta.
It was called Mech Commander. That's what it was called.
Oh,
that's okay. The one I was thinking of.
Commander.
And then there was a Mech Commander 2, I think.
Yes, and actually that was done by, and those are two of my favorite games in the BattleTech world. They were RTSs. They were amazing. They came out in what, the 90s?
No, that was definitely 2001. Yeah, I guess it was 2001 for Mech Commander 2. Wow, yeah, I thought that was way more recent.
I know. God, I'm old. I know exactly how you feel. Yes, I know that feels too. Actually, does Good Old Games have Mech Commander on it? Because that would be amazing. I will happily go launch that bastard again. But yeah, so Mech Commander was awesome. It was amazing. It was well done. There was like a mercenary thing. There was character advancement throughout the game. You had limited, it was like a RTS, but you had limited exposure. No, they did a great job with that. Nope, no Mech Commander.
That's
I don't
bad.
Think it's on Steam. I actually own it somewhere. But yeah, so Facet Interactive owned Facet Studios that... Microsoft now, I think, owns FASA's online or interactive arts, and I don't know how the licensing works from there anymore. But yeah, so BattleTech's coming back.
I'm surprised you are not more involved in PUBG, PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds.
I know why you say that, and I am also surprised, but at the same time, I realize I don't have any time.
You know what? That's for the best, because right now, even though the game is a really unique blend and they've done a damn good job like putting together the pieces, it's not a finished game, man. There's so many bugs. There's so much lag right now on the servers. And that's but the good news is that, man, they have been making ridiculously rapid progress every time they commit to a specific thing. Like they didn't commit to, you know, working on the servers yet. That's literally their next problem. They said the next big patch is specifically going to solve the netcode issues or work on the netcode issues. But the last patch worked on FPS problems, and I saw tons of people saying, oh man, this patch massively improved my FPS, and now I can notice how bad the lag is. Where you get like, where you see somebody warping around in front of you, and then you go back around a corner and they kill you 2 seconds later, despite the fact that you were now around the corner.
It was okay, but I didn't know how bad it was.
That's the thing is, regardless, it's still really ridiculously fun and intense. I've never had like my heart beating at the end. It was just like, you know, I'm crawling across the ground. I'm desperately looking in every direction. I don't know where they are. I heard a shot before. It was from the north, but it's been a while. I don't know where the next person is. Yeah. Do I take the risk? I got to get out of here. I can't stay where I am. Oh my God. And then right next to me by my head. And I'm like, what the hell just happened? I'm dead. I don't know what it was. I jumped out of my chair and I went upstairs. I'm like, I got to get a drink of water. Calm down.
Nice.
It's really tense. Yeah. And it's so much fun with a bunch of people, even if you're like, I shot that guy. But you know what? It's still a ton of fun. And it's got that gambling element, right? It's got that slot machine. Like, hey, a new group of houses. I wonder if this one's going to have a car 98 in it, right? It's just like I'm trying to get triple cherries or something and find the jackpot. Like, yes, there it is. The thing I was looking for.
Just hit him with a car.
That certainly has worked. But it's incredibly easy to actually just shoot somebody who's in a car. The other thing that I'm waiting for is bullet penetration. Right now, it doesn't have any bullet penetration. So if you know where somebody is, you have to wait until they walk in front of a window or something, and then you can shoot them. But if they hide behind something, you should just be able to shoot through the freaking planks they're hiding behind.
Straight up World of Tanks, where the guy's hiding behind like a cow cart. and the shots, for whatever reason, the cow cart's not destructible, so the shots just, you know, nail it and blow up and don't do anything to the tank. I'm like, all right.
What? But yeah, I've been
Conan O'Brien playing Overwatch with the Game of Thrones cast.
No. Yeah. That's the most ridiculous sentence I've ever heard.
But there's a point where they're like running around a box clearly made out of plywood, like raking the thing with bullets, and nobody's getting hit. He's like, oh yeah, that plywood. Good, sturdy, bulletproof plywood.
There's no material stronger in the world than the texture.
Yep.
And there's no part of that sentence I didn't like. That's very funny.
Do you guys remember there
who played Roadhog?
Who played Roadhog? It looks like Conan's playing D.Va.
I don't think anyone was actually playing Roadhog out of their group.
They missed the best one.
They were playing. Peter Dinklage was playing as Winston.
Okay.
And they had they had Cersei playing as I can't remember her name. It's killing me. They had her playing as Hanzo.
Okay.
Which was pretty funny because Winston just came and kicked the crap out of her until she swapped over to D.Va.
Okay.
That's funny. This still exists. So this discussion reminded me of something. I don't know if you're familiar with the Guide to Making a Successful FPS from Something Awful from June of 2000. This is a list like the Evil Overlord list. It's like, number one, when designing a map for the bad guy's ultra-high-tech top-secret base, you'll want to be sure to put an excessive amount of poison or acid pools below small metal suspension bridges. This really gives off the impression that the head bad guy is evil because he makes his employees work in such poorly ventilated base containing insane amount of hazardous waste. Try to hint at the fact that they're not given healthcare either. The poison should always be colored green because it's simply ludicrous to think that liquid-colored brown or yellow could harm you if you fell into it.
Nice.
When placing bonus items or ammunition, make sure to put them on top of extremely high ledges and platforms that are virtually impossible to get to. This stresses realism, because if you had a box of high explosive rockets in your house, would you place them on the floor where babies and dogs and neighbors could get to them? No, you'd put them high up in the rafters in the living room. It's only common sense. I think my favorite, let me see if I can find, my favorite one was about bridges. And that is, you know,
going too far?
No. Here it is. If the main character has an NPC partner, the partner should be ineffective and constantly offer essentially useless information. Example, partner is standing in front of a destroyed bridge. NPC partner would radio in saying, "Oh, the bridge has been destroyed. Looks like you'll have to find another way in." He will offer no additional hints or suggestions. Bonus points will be awarded if the sidekick radios in after the main character dies, commenting, "Looks like you've been killed." there's a lot of good ones.
That's funny.
Let's see. Your main character should be capable of eating at least 10 bags of chips in a single second. That's important.
Yeah. Oh, so one thing I had not put together on this Battletech thing for reference. Harebrained did all the Shadowrun RPG games you get on Steam.
I never played any of those.
You should. They're so good. They're very kind of top-down 80s, 90s, like early 90s style RPGs. Where, like, do you ever play the Dark Sun RPGs by any chance?
Nope.
Or the Dungeons and Dragons like RPGs you could install and play. No. All right. So basically, you had a group. Oh, Baldur's Gate. Baldur's Gate's another example of what.
Okay.
Very much like Baldur's Gate.
Okay.
Only done in the Shadowrun universe with guns and wizards and cybernetic parts and orcs. Yeah.
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah.
That's fair.
Yeah. So you would enjoy it thoroughly. Now I don't even know which. I must have gone with Initiate of the Order or House Scion, because I've got myself a house banner. Steiner for the win, guys. Sorry, I'm still on this.
Speaking of, you know what I've heard?
Mm-hmm.
Today
the bird is the word?
Yes, it is. That's true. A certain news about an arboreal situation. No, the... embargo for Wonder Woman came down today.
Embargo.
People are saying it's good.
Oh, the press embargo.
Yeah.
Got it. Took me a second to catch up there.
Yeah.
Will this be the first of the movies there? And that
the
whole
first of the DCU movies that are good? Yeah, maybe.
It does not blow. Well, that's fantastic.
Oh, you know what? I didn't mention it on this show, but I did find it. A friend of mine came over, and he's a big sci-fi fan, and he was telling me about some story that he read. He couldn't remember what it was, and so I asked on Google I asked on Reddit, and somebody found it. It's by Harry Turtledove. I think we've talked about him before. He does a lot of what-if alternative history stuff.
He sure does.
He wrote a short story called The Road Not Taken. I'll put a link to the PDF. It's like an hour read or less in the show notes here. And it is a supposition that goes along with this premise, right? What if – let me remember to put this in the show notes. What if hyperspace travel is actually super simple and just by pure coincidence, humanity has not found it yet? But there are other much more primitive species out there that are rolling around with – having just figured out how to smelt iron, but they're rolling around with wooden vessels traveling through hyperspace and conquering each other's planets. What happens when they come to Earth in the year 2039 and find a planet and they go, these humans don't even have hyperspace travel. Surely we'll be able to take them out with our 24 ships and we'll scare them into submission and there'll be another great piece of the empire. And they get to Earth and they see all these shining
isolated
lights on the
back. Sociopaths.
Yeah, they see these shining lights on the back on the dark side of Earth and one of them goes, I think those are cities. And they're like, you idiot. They don't have fires big enough to make lights like that from this distance. It must be some weird natural phenomenon, probably plants that are glowing or something. And then they get down and they land and they take a Napoleonic era fighting stance with like muskets against like assault rifles and artillery and armored fighting vehicles. And they just get smashed. And then like it ends with one of them being captured and interrogated. And finally, his friend is brought into the same cell with him, and he's like, how could this happen? How could they have all this and not even have hyperdrive yet? And the other one says, I don't know. I think they even know what causes their diseases. That's amazing. They're so much more advanced. It's a pretty fun read.
So that reminds me of a Dean Ng book, actually. I'm trying to look for the actual title of it. I'm having a hard time. But the premise was unique. This alien race comes to Earth, and you know they come faster than light. We haven't figured it out yet, and so they look down and they see some. They say, "Oh my God, they still have like 30 languages. They haven't unified as a government yet."
Hmm.
So then they orbit the planet. They send down a probe, and it's during the middle of the Cold War when this book takes place, and it gets shot down by an ICBM.
Oh, jeez. It's a little overkill.
And they stop, and they say, well, what the fuck was that? They can't possibly – they don't even have, like, good laser communications. They can't possibly have the ability to shoot that down, send another one, and it gets shot down. And so they have this repeated theme of – and so it turns out humanity is, in a unique situation in his world where we have we have plate tectonics, and we didn't have those wipe us out as a species. So when we actually show up, the premise of the book, the humanity gets recruited into the war, and it turns out we're just bloodthirsty, angry motherfuckers who are unable to control ourselves and are terrors to the galaxy as a whole. It's a complete twist on the humanity. Federation uplifts the aliens.
Our tribal nature actually does get the better of us, is what you're saying.
Yeah, and then like, some groups end up working for the other side, which is like this hive mind enslaving group who had never seen anything like us, and it's like, what the hell? so that we become humanity's, we become the universe's mercenaries. And so, yeah, it was a very interesting take. Dean Ng, I can't remember
the Murder Hobos of the Universe.
Murder Hobos of the Universe, yeah, that could be it. I cannot recall it for the life of me now what it's called. I'm looking through his bibliography.
Somebody will post in the comments, I'm sure. The explanation for how that could possibly happen in the road not taken, how humanity could, you know, be so much more advanced, how these is because hyperdrive is so easy to figure out, but it's disconnected. It's not connected to the electromagnetic spectrum. You don't have to understand, and it doesn't reveal it's the wonders of the electromagnetic spectrum. So once you get hyperdrive, technology doesn't advance as much because you just go and conquer other places and you have the ability to travel. So you don't need things like the internal combustion engine. So you don't develop that. You don't develop industrialization. You don't develop the electromagnetic spectrum. So it stagnates, whereas humanity had to figure that shit out because we didn't have hyperdrive. Yes. It's a pretty cool premise.
That's
good.
Terry Pratchett, towards the end of his life, wrote a very similar book called The Long Earth and then The Long War, where humanity finally figures out what our more primitive ancestors figured out a long time ago, which is how to move from one version of Earth to the next. And it's, you're in the same spot in space and time, but you've switched your universe. So it's a multiverse. And so the other creatures that are out there are actually quite primitive, and they've gone as far as making spears, because if they want to sneak up on prey, they step over to the next world, walk to where the prey is, step back, and strangle it. So yeah, it's a very interesting premise.
So when you said the long Earth, this is the only thing I could think of? It's like Earth stretched out? For those of you playing the home game, I just showed a picture of the engineer from TF2 with a long neck saying, nope.
Giraffe. This is a giraffe engineer.
The giraffe. Giraffe-treneer. All right. All right. Let's call it there. I'm heading out here maybe to play some more PUBG. But I know I must wait until it gets better, but I still kind of want to. Anyway.
No, you're still going to play.
Damn it.
You need your red and white striped shirt, man.
I do. All right. See you guys later.
See ya. Have a nice night.